Scott Wheeler, NHL draft and prospect reporter for The Athletic and an author as well. Scott, we'll ask you about that in a moment. But, Scott, you are down in St. John, correct?
I am. I'm flying out at 9:15 p.m. tonight, fingers crossed. My flight was supposed to be this morning at about 11 a.m., and I got the old, you're delayed by 10 hours here. So
classic.
Hanging around the hotel for a little while here.
Classic. You're coming into Pearson, I assume?
Yeah.
Oof, yeah. Good luck, pal. Good luck on that flight. But I hear there is a party going on in St. John today. Can you confirm? Ooh.
Yes, I can confirm. They were at Rockies last night. The bar sort of shut down for them and was open all night for the team and the rest of the staff. And that spilled, I can confirm, right into this morning and into the parade. And the guys who were of age, at least, were definitely getting after it. So, it's huge. This is a big moment for this team. They were arguably the best team in the QMJHL, but they got bounced in a really weird first-round series. And then they had 38 days off to get to this point, and they were the best team all week. They beat the OHL champion Hamilton Bulldogs twice. They beat the Q champion Shawinigan Cataracts. They lost in overtime to Edmonton, the WHL champ. So they were 3-0-1 in this tournament. They were the best team by a wide margin, and I thought they controlled play. I thought they were the deepest team. They were the team with the most NHL prospects. Even the supporting cast beyond the NHL prospects, it was just clear all week that they had more guys. Part of that's health, certainly, with all the time off, but they earned this. They were the best team for much of the year in the queue, and then were the best team this week here, no question.
I thought it was just a great story. You know, like a team that they got eliminated in the first round, but being host nation, they get that automatic berth. So they fire their coach and bring in Gardner McDougall, who ultimately leads this team to the promised land, and they win the championship. I mean, how you know, much of a story was that while you were down there in St. John?
Oh, it's a huge, huge part of it. Gardner is a legend on the East Coast of Canada in the hockey world. He's sort of Mr. Hockey out here. He's been the head coach for three decades now of the University of New Brunswick. They are the titans of U sports in Canada and sort of annual national champions or close. So they brought him in. They let go Gordy Dwyer after the first round exit. They were not expecting to lose in the first round. They were up 2-1 in that series and actually outshot Rimouski 40-14 in game four. And in the first round, it's a best of five. So if they'd won game four, they would have advanced to the second round. And they lost that game despite outshooting them 14-14. They lost it 1-0. So it was a heartbreaking way to go about it. They then lost game five in overtime. And it just wasn't meant to be for them. They brought in Gardner. Gardner sort of revitalized this team, got them excited again, changed around the lines, was deploying players differently, used a different goalie. Couture was used in the QMJHL playoffs, but Hurtubise, the reigning QMJHL champion goalie that they went and traded two first-round picks for at the deadline, only to not have him play in the first round. They made the switch to him for this Memorial Cup. So Gardner pushed all the right buttons. He's a very folksy guy, and I think the team was really drawn to that. You could tell last night on the ice that he was maybe the guy they were happiest for, even though he's the one they've known for the least amount of time. And they really rallied around Gardner, and it was a ton of fun to sort of watch the team come together. And the city was buzzing. And this is what this tournament's supposed to be all about. It's about getting out to these smaller communities. It doesn't have to be in Edmonton or Vancouver or Quebec City every year, right? And these places love junior hockey. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's a big moment for this town.
And the Leafs had a prospect who was part of the St. John Sea Dogs championship team, and that's William Villeneuve. And he wakes up a Memorial Cup champion today. And what can you tell us about him, Scott?
Well, I'm not even sure he woke up a Memorial Cup champion. I think he's
he's one of the few of age guys, so I can only imagine.
There you go. Yeah. Sent it deep.
But no, I mean, Willie was tremendous. Last night was his best game of the tournament. He had primary assists and really created both of the first two goals. They stormed out to an early 2-0 lead, and from there, it was over. They were just in front all night long. The crowd was behind them. Hamilton looked like they were chasing it a little bit. Mason McTavish, the sort of biggest name prospect in the tournament, the third overall pick of the Anaheim in last year's draft, sort of dragged them back into it with two big goals to make it a bit of a game late. But Willie was huge. It was a big, big performance for him, and he was driving the bus on that top pairing with Vincent Sevigny, their captain, and that top pairing was big for them all tournament, but especially when it mattered most. And Villeneuve, I know, was a player that the Leafs really liked. Jason Spezza and Kyle Dubas were out here this week watching him specifically, obviously, and he's made big progress in his skating. That was the big question when they selected him. He was a player who produced like sort of a second or third rounder, but was drafted a little bit later because of concerns about his skating. And he was one of the better defensemen in the QMJHL this season. So that's a credit to him and credit to the job the Leafs development staff has done. I know they've come out here regularly and worked with him and sort of helped him through it over video and all of that. So he's become a bit of a nice story. And they've actually, as a sort of mid to late round pick, they've actually signed him now as well to an entry-level contract. So he'll be involved in the fold with the Marlies over the next year or two.
Beautiful. So those here in Toronto get a chance to watch him live in person next season. Hopefully he has a pretty good year with the Marlies. In conversation with Scott Wheeler, NHL draft and prospects writer for The Athletic. He was down at the Memorial Cup over this past week. But we're about a week away until the NHL draft next week, July 7th, I want to say, is day one of the draft. I see you had Shane Wright as your top prospect in your final draft ranking, despite all this late love coming for Yuri Slavkovsky, who you got ranked as your fifth-rated prospect. Why haven't you wavered on Shane Wright, Scott, and why to you is he the top guy in the draft?
Well, there definitely has been a bit of wavering. I think coming into this year, I viewed Shane as the clear-cut guy in my early rankings, which I break down into tiers on top of the sort of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 rankings. There was kind of a singular ranking at number one, and then it widened out after that. And now at year's end, I've got five guys in that top group, and I think they all belong right there in the conversation with Shane, if not for first overall, then certainly for second and third overall. So I believe Uriah is still in that group. But I'm a little cautiously optimistic with Uriah. He's a tremendous player. There are not many 6'4", 220-pound players who can stick handle and pull pucks through his feet and toe drag. And he's got some flash to his game as a big man, and that is very, very rare. So to see what he is capable of out there and what he obviously did already at both the Olympics and Men's Worlds this year is extremely exciting. I do worry with Slavkovsky that he's going to play at 230, 235, and frankly, there just aren't many NHL forwards playing at that weight anymore. Really, Alex Ovechkin, Vladimir Tarasenko, JT Miller, that's about your list. That's three guys. So maybe he becomes one of those guys. I think he's certainly capable of becoming a Miller or a Tarasenko type, but it's a tall task when you're that big and that heavy to really produce offense. Whereas with Shane, I think there's a safer projection there. He also plays a premium position. Obviously, Slavkovsky's a left winger. Shane plays down the middle. And I'm not sure Shane ever becomes a true sort of star in the game. I'm not sure he's going to be the 80, 90-point center that you hope to draft with the number one pick. But I view Shane as the kind of guy who can become a 60, 70-point center and provide value on both sides of the puck, potentially even penalty kill and take important faceoffs. And a 60, 70-point center in today's NHL is an $8, $9 million player. So even if he doesn't become a 10 or 11 or $12 million player, I still think he's going to be a top-of-the-lineup guy. And I really like him for Montreal. I've heard rumblings that they might actually take Slavkovsky and that they have considered both sort of really strongly here. But if they go with Shane Wright, I really like him as a fit behind Nick Suzuki, and I think the two of them could be a really strong 1-2 punch down the middle.
With the Leafs picking at 25, what are some of the names that Leafs fans can look for in that range in the draft?
Well, coincidentally, there are several names in this draft that really fit the kind of players that the Leafs like in that range. I would look to a player like Noah Ostlund out of Djurgården. There are three likely first-round picks coming out of Djurgården's junior and SHL team this year, which is pretty rare for an SHL club. And Noah is the center of the three of them. They actually all played on the same line this year, left wing, center, right wing. And he was the pivot. He was a big part of their gold medal upset over the Americans at U18 Worlds. They went down a center in that tournament. He double-shifted. And he's a sort of slick 5'10", 5'11" center, but plays a very detail-oriented game. He was their best face-off guy. He was their go-to penalty killer, and he's widely viewed, despite being a little bit of a skinnier kid, he's widely viewed as a very responsible defensive center on top of having the sort of slick playmaking skill that you expect out of a player that size when they go in the first round. So a lot to like about Östlund. Another kid that comes to mind is a kid by the name of Jagr Furkus of the Moose Jaw Warriors.
That's Al's brother's guy. He molded him.
Yeah, one of the very best names. Great head of hair, got the ginger pigment, and he's a very, very, very confident sort of attacking player, one of the best players in the draft with the puck on his stick. Same kind of thing as Östlund, though. A little bit of a skinnier 5'10" kid, was asked a lot at the combine about his weight, and he from what I've been told about his interviews, really pushed back against teams and said, I'm going to be a star in this league, and you're going to be laughing about it 5-10 years ago. So lots to like about Furkus and Östlund if they go with a forward there. And those are really the two guys that come to mind. But I've also been told this week that they invited the two Mississauga Steelheads. So I'd add those two names into the mix. One is a kid by the name of Owen Beck, who was actually in St. John this week when he was named the Scholastic Player of the Year for sort of excelling in the classroom. Owen is a kind of prototypical pro-style player who many teams project to be a third-line center. And then there's Luca Delbeluz, actually another center. They were the 1-2 centers with the Mississauga Steelheads. And Luca plays more of a skill game. He's a sort of 6'1" center who's got a really nice release and plays more of a sort of crafty finesse game than the straight line game that Owen Beck plays. But those are probably the four guys I would keep an eye on in Delbeluz, Beck, Furkus, and Östlund.
We're chatting with Scott Wheeler, NHL draft and prospects reporter for The Athletic. Scott, I want to get to what the biggest question mark in Leafs land is going to be over the course of the offseason. That's the goaltending position. Because I was listening to Overdrive yesterday, and Brian was naming off all of these goaltenders that the Maple Leafs, A, they haven't been able to develop anyone in 30 years, and because of that, they've had to go out and trade for guys. Go back to, we got to go and get Cujo, we got to go get Belfour, we got to go get Toskala, got to go get Bernier, got to go get Freddie, gotta go. They can't
sign Jonas Gustafsson too.
Go sign the monster Jonas Gustafsson. So they haven't been able to like draft and develop anybody. So my question to you is there somebody in that system who potentially could turn into a pretty good starting goalie that they have? I know they got a couple of kids out in Russia. They signed Dryden McKay, which was your Hobie Baker Award winner this past season, the NCAA. And if not, is there potentially a couple of goaltenders in the draft that the Maple Leafs might be able to target?
Well, I do like two of the kids that they have in the system. I like McKay. McKay took a bad rap this year, I think, because he's the smaller goalie. And increasingly, I've tended to push back on that. I don't think that you need to be 6'4", 6'5", to be a top goalie or even to be a goalie in the NHL. Some of the great success stories in the prospects world in the last couple of years have been Dustin Wolf of the Calgary Flames, who is fully expected to be the guy behind Jacob Markstrom in the next year or two. And B, Devin Levi with the Buffalo Sabres, who was obviously the goalie for Canada at the World Juniors 2 years ago and led them to a gold medal and was arguably the better goalie than Dryden McKay in college hockey this year. So two of the best goalie prospects on the planet these days are 5'11", 6 foot guys. We know what UC Saros is. We know what Alexander Georgiev is. So there are NHL guys doing the same thing. Yaroslav Halak before them, Anton Khudobin before them. It's not a small list, and I think those guys are capable. So I like McKay. McKay plays a bit of a blocking style too, which is weird for a smaller goalie. You almost expect smaller goalies to be the freakishly athletic players and the bigger goalies to be the positional style, and that's not McKay's game. McKay's game is swallowing the first shot, making sure he doesn't give up rebounds, that he doesn't have to get into those athletic scrambles. But I like McKay. I'm not sure he'll ever be a sort of clear number one or a clear number two, but I expect him to be organizational depth for them and a guy that they can turn to play NHL games. And then the other name that I actually really like, and he spent almost all of this year in Newfoundland, is Keith Petruzzelli. Petruzzelli played at Quinnipiac, was a top prospect at the Detroit Red Wings that just kind of fell out of favor with him and that relationship there, and decided when he was done his college career to test free agency, signed with the Leafs. Petruzzelli was, for my money, the best goalie in the ECHL when he was there this year. And I thought he played really well with the Marlies as well. And Petruzzelli is at the opposite end of the spectrum as McKay. He's the 6'6", 6'7" giant who just sort of fills the net. And it took him a long time to fill out his frame. He was a sort of wiry kid, didn't even really look like an athlete for a lot of years. And now he's started to do that. He's got comfortable with his body, and I think he's a heck of a goalie. So those guys are just, they're important pieces in that I think they'll be really good for the Marlies, and maybe one of them emerges and your backup goalie goes down with an injury and suddenly your third string guy comes up and starts outperforming them and that kind of route. That's what you have to imagine is a best case outcome for players like Petruzzelli and Dryden McKay. As for this draft, unfortunately, after 3 years of top goalie prospects, one by one by one, we were kind of spoiled with Jesper Wallstad and Sebastian Kosta and Spencer Knight and Yaroslav Askarov. We've had four legit high-end star goalie prospects come through the draft in the last 3 years. And the reality of this draft is that there isn't another one of those guys in it. And frankly, the two top goalie prospects in this draft, Tyler Brennan and Tobias Leinonen, I'm not particularly fond of in terms of their NHL upside. So really not a lot to get super excited about in this draft. There are a couple of goalies, one kid by the name of Hugo Haviland, who I actually really quite like. But you're talking about a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounder rather than a first or second rounder, right? So probably not the goalie of the future to go after in this draft.
Scott, Nick Robertson's been an interesting guy because he burst onto the scene, and since then it's been up and down, it's been injuries, and not quite sure where he fits. So I guess my question to you is, you know, where should he start the season, and where do you think he evidently will start the season?
Well, I think he should start the season being given every opportunity available. I think the Leafs, because they spend the cap, have gotten into a habit with some of their young kids when they're ready of signing so many decent sort of late August veterans each summer that they feel obligated to play those guys early in the year and see what they have in the older guys that they tend to target in the off season. And the result has been that there hasn't been anything gifted to these players in the way that roster spots are sometimes left open to top prospects in other organizations. And I think now you're getting into the sort of period here where Nick's owed a real look, and not a real look where he plays 11 minutes and maybe gets a shift here and there on the second power play. I think he should be a regular on the second power play, and they should give him 20, 30 games to sort of pedal to the metal in a top nine role. You know, he doesn't have to play on the first line left wing with Austin Matthews or anything, but I'd like to see him get into the mix as a regular, them test him and see where he's at. And I know they were really excited about his play in the second half of last season. Just speaking with members of the organization, both with the Leafs and with the Marlies, they thought he'd really sort of rounded a corner and become one of the top players in the AHL when he was out there on a night-to-night basis, and they were really impressed by his consistency. So I like him as a scrappy little guy who's going to become a bit of a fan favorite, I suspect. He plays with a bit of a reckless abandon. He's going to get blown up and maybe get the odd injury because of how fearless he plays. But he can really shoot the puck. He can really handle the puck. His creativity and playmaking has come a long way. And I think he's going to be a good top nine winger in the NHL long term. And they've got to figure out how soon they can get that out of him. And ultimately on his contract as an entry-level player, that's incumbent. That's a big deal for them if they can get him playing for cheap and succeeding. So I'd like to see them really give him an opportunity here.
Yeah, and there might be a chance to do it too when you just look at the roster, and there's some spots on the left side up in that top nine that he can come and grab if he has a good camp. Before we let you go, Scott, you got a book coming out, On the Clock, Behind the Scenes with the Toronto Maple Leafs at the NHL Draft. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the book and where people can get it?
Yeah, this has been 2 years in the making. It's the first time I've written a book. It'll be out October 4th in your local chapters, or if you're in the States, in your local Barnes & Noble. It'll be on Amazon, all of that. Really excited. It's 20 stories about the people and moments in time that have taken place at the Leafs draft history over the years. It's not an encyclopedia. You're not going to read about every single draft and every single player they took. But I have sat down with 50 people for the book and sort of tried to tell stories of decisions that were and weren't made at the draft, players that were selected, both extremely successful ones. You'll hear about Austin Matthews and how they went about sort of making the decision on Austin versus Patrick Laine. You'll go inside the 2016 draft lottery with Brendan Shanahan. So there are the big stories. I felt compelled to tell those, but there are also stories about decisions that weren't made and were made that will shock some people, I think. And then there are stories that people have never heard about, minor characters that sort of worked behind the scenes with the Leafs at the draft to make things happen. So just a ton of fun to sort of put together, and can't wait to have it out in October.
Literally sounds like hockey porn for Leaf junkies. Hockey porn for Leaf and draft junkies. I can't wait to get a copy of that one. Really appreciate you joining us today, Scott, and have a good summer, pal.
Cheers. Thanks as always, guys.
All right. There he is, Scott Wheeler, NHL draft and prospects reporter from The Athletic, and an author.